way of life.
I'm trying to stave off a pancake coma.
Already?
It's been a while.
It's been 15 minutes since you had the pancake.
I'm just anticipating, because you haven't made pancakes in a while, and now I'm like, I'm remembering how it, you know, all that, it's delicious and great. I love your pancakes.
That's right.
But they do, you know, they sap your will after a while.
The reason I haven't made pancakes in a while is because of one of the movies we're going to talk about.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I can see that. We are using guest soundboard today, so the opening segments may require a little audio adjustment, but you can deal with it.
Are we okay?
Yeah, it'll just, you know, I may have to fiddle with it a bit.
Are we loud enough right now?
It'll be fine.
Okay.
Trust me.
This is Linoleum Knife. We are a podcast of the cinema. Mm-hmm. I am Dave White. I am the film critic for movies.com.
And I'm Alonzo Duraldi. I'm film critic for TheWrap.com and What the Flick. And we are using guest board today because we have a guest.
A pancake eater.
Yes.
So delicious.
Thank you.
No coma yet.
Give it time.
That'll happen. There's a gang of sugar in that.
It's coming.
In that pancake you just had.
If we sound more like chimps today, it's because we have a legitimate radio professional joining us, which we're very excited about. Please welcome Madeline Brand of Press Play.
Oh, thank you.
Here on KCRW.
Well, thanks for having me.
A legend of NPR, and we've been lucky enough to go on her show a couple times, and then we basically coerced her into coming on ours.
Coerced? You dangled the pancake.
I think of you as the president of KCRW.
I think the real president of KCRW wouldn't take kindly to that.
I don't know who that is and do not care who that is.
She's a lovely woman. Jennifer. Okay. Jennifer is
the president. I do know who that
Jennifer.
Is. Jennifer. I care.
Way to burn those bridges.
I think of you as the vice president of KCRW.
Like the Joe Biden?
Yeah.
I'm the Joe Biden. I'm the guy who says inappropriate things at inappropriate moments.
Well, it's better than being the Cheney, I guess.
Pretty much anybody that I don't think we're worthy of having on as a guest, I decide that they're the president or whatever.
Something.
Like every time, two, three times now Manola has been on the show, I always think, she's the president of all the film critics. And so...
Well, maybe she is.
I believe that she is. She always says,
she's the dean, as they would say on old game shows.
Right, the dean.
The dean of film critics.
It's like being called a veteran. You don't really want that.
Yeah, it seems like a compliment, but then it's also like, you're old.
Oh,
okay.
Old and out of it.
Now, so, Madeline, you are, you've been doing Press Play for the better part of a year now, right? Or when did that show start?
Well, it started in January, so...
Oh, wow, okay.
I know. It seems like it's been on forever.
Goodness.
And I'll take that.
Well, that's because you've been on the radio.
It already feels established.
You've been on the radio here for such a long time that I just...
I know, it sort of all melds into one whole thing of me talking a lot.
When did you start on all this?
Start in life?
In radio.
In radio?
A lady never tells.
Yeah. Well, if I say that, then a lady will be telling. So, in college.
Okay.
So that was a good few years ago.
Gotcha, sure.
So, yeah, I've been doing it ever since college. Can you believe that?
That's pretty much
my entire life.
Because you're good at it, I can believe
that. Well, it's because I can figure out what else to do, so.
Well,
fun. It's not really, like, working.
Yeah, I always tell people, like, the magic of getting that job is don't have a plan B.
Right.
You know, if you are qualified to do nothing else,
then you just have to do this thing.
Just
do it and get good at it. It's that 10,000 hours thing. For me, it's been more like 100,000 hours. But, you know.
I did it in college, too, and it was there that they told me that I should never, ever do it again.
Really?
Yeah,
why? But you have the pipes. Listen to you.
No, but I did not have what I had mostly in college was a record collection. And so that was the whole reason I was on. And I didn't want to talk very much. And I didn't want to talk the way they wanted us to talk.
Which was what?
Like a radio person.
Uh-huh. Like with effects.
Yeah. Like a commercial radio. It was like
those drops.
It was a commercial radio station, sort of training station,
uh-huh,
that we turned into a college radio station with all the weird music. But that tension was always there, where all these mass comm people were doing their required hours on the station. And and giving then, themselves radio names and stuff. Like, I'm Pamela Steele, you know, like. And
everything that Howard Stern rebels against in the first half of Private Parts.
Yeah, pretty much. And I remember being told repeatedly on my air check tapes that I didn't have enough enthusiasm, that I didn't modulate my voice like to fit anything. Like I just
Hey, you weren't giving him a two for Tuesday.
No. I was just be like
that's pretty good.
Oh well, thanks.
I would just get on the radio and be like, that was the Minutemen.
Well, and then of course they make Dave the music director, which is like the most perverse,
the most brilliant idea they ever had.
Because then suddenly Lubbock, Texas, is subjected to what Dave White thinks is appropriate radio
fare,
which
was all punk,
which was awesome.
All punk
at that
time.
No, it was all kinds of everything. It was all the dumb stuff that people liked, like Depeche Mode and The Cure, and it was all the punk rock stuff, and
it wasn't just punk. It was
indie stuff,
like actual noise, like
you weren't even there.
You've told me about it, and I've heard Pete talk about it. Like the stuff. There's an actual category at Amoeba that's called noise, and that's the stuff that Dave would slip into the airplay there
late at night.
Yes.
So
not
when
in the day.
You
in the daytime,
to,
it
trying
was
trying to sleep.
Yeah.
When you were getting romantic, you know, with your lady. Hey, lady. Hey, I'm gonna put on a little Mertzbo.
Quiet storm.
Pour us some martini and Rossi.
No, but in the daytime, in the morning, it was in the afternoon. It was always, you know, like we would play whatever. We would play Sonic Youth, or we would play the Stone Roses, or you know, all
something
the stuff that you
controversial.
Hear, all the stuff that you would hear on Morning Becomes Eclectic, but then also we would play Motorhead, but we would play like the
ballad,
the Bulgarian Women's Choir, and
the
you know, stuff,
version.
Late
yeah.
80s, early 90s things that you did. The noise didn't happen until
your show.
10 o'clock at night when I was on.
Does this exist in any form that we could hear?
No.
No
air checks?
There was an air check tape that I had for a while, and then I lost it or something.
Dave buries his past. Like so, there's
I'm Don Draper.
There's a whole Mohawk.
What's your real name?
There's a whole Mohawk
Dick
period
of which
no photographic evidence remains, and it kills me.
Oh, you could recreate it though.
I was punk.
You could.
I was a punk rocker in the 80s. I was there at the right time. It was 1980, yeah. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and I had a Mohawk and. I was
Did you have piercings and leathers
super
and
angry.
All that?
No, because I, the piercings, I'm not, no tattoos, no piercings. But I dressed, you know, from the Episcopal Church's thrift store and wore just raggedy.
How did
everything.
That go over in Lubbock?
Well, Texas Tech has, like, at the time, they had about 25,000 students. And about 25 of us were punk rock. And so you banded together. You weren't, you know,
you were
there
the mighty 1%.
There were no factions. It wasn't like the Black Flag gang or the Suicidal Tendencies gang fighting each other at the Palladium. You know, this was a tall, small town, and you went to all the shows whether you wanted to see the band or not because all your friends were there, and you had to support the band you didn't like coming through town so that the band you did like coming through town could come to town and had
minor
to be,
threat, okay.
be guaranteed an audience. Yeah. So, that's, I mean, and all the bands came through town because it was a college town and they, you know, got 20, 30 people to show up to these shows. It was great. It was a great place to be punk rock because just like in the movie we saw last night, We Are the Best, which is coming out at the end of the month, you know, that deprivation forces you into a kind of compromise with other people and it forces you to be creative in mm-hmm. terms of your own social survival.
it also requires, in certain ways, less effort. I mean, I think being indie in Nashville, where I went to college, was a lot easier than if I had gone to, you know, NYU or something. Like, I would have had
Then you're not indie.
Yeah,
you're kind of mainstream.
Exactly. Right? You have to go more out of your way to sort of stand out. But
you'd have
you know,
to be into country at NYU to be indie.
That would,
right?
Yes. That would mess things up. You know, and... Madelash, I remember really getting hooked into your show because you have frequently featured a good friend of ours, Dr. Patrick Krug, oceanographer, who goes on to talk about the sex lives of sea cucumbers or whatever, which
he
is always...
He is my favorite marine biologist.
Yes.
He's terrific.
Ours
he,
too.
And very tall.
He is.
He's extremely tall.
He's a tall...
He's like 6'7", 6'8".
Yeah, he's 6 feet and change. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's got a lot going on there.
Yeah.
And so you're a native...
Of L.A.?
Yeah.
I am.
There's so few of you.
No, we've got a band together, the 0.1%.
Like you're the punks, yeah.
I know. Well, yeah, I grew up actually right there, over there, in those hills.
Really?
Outside your kitchen window.
You grew up in the Jacaranda.
And I'm very sticky.
In the Gap billboard on the side of the building.
Yes.
Oh, cool. And, well, I actually, speaking of punk, I mean, you were here for a lot of musical revolutions.
Well, you know,
were you
funny
that
you should mention the college radio station, because I worked for the college radio station at Berkeley called Calex, and I was in the news department, but I also had a music show, and so I had a name.
Oh,
yes.
Which was?
I'm going to just tell you
okay.
what it is.
Tell
it's
it.
Not something that I broadcast
tell us.
Widely.
Tell us.
Dozens of people are hearing this, but.
Madam Bomb.
Yeah!
That is punk rock.
Oh, that's so good.
Pretty funny.
That's a great drag name, too.
Isn't it?
Yes.
I have been mistaken for a drag queen
in
the past.
Stop.
I have. I was just telling this story the other day.
What idiot?
I went into a club. This is a long time ago. And I was going with a friend of mine who was a man, not in drag. Mm-hmm. And you could get in for free if you're a drag queen.
Mm.
So he walks in and they're like, $5. Pays us $5. I walk in behind him and they're like, go on through. And I said, no, I will pay you. No, it's quite all right.
I insist.
I am a for real lady.
Were you wearing a lot of makeup that night? Or
it was early 90s, you know.
Especially
it
tall was, boots.
It was just, you know.
A
I was,
fall? Something?
I don't know what it was. Maybe they thought, that's really good. That's really
she
good.
She is serving up realness.
Yeah.
Well, Jennifer, I remember my friend Jennifer back in Texas, who was 6 feet tall. And she would dress up to go to gay bars, to go dancing, like, with me. I would dress like this. And she would wear, like, full-on sort of, like, Jackie Kennedy sort of, you know, the hat and the vintage dresses and stuff. And,
this is back when people smoked in bars.
Yes. She got mistaken for a guy.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. Because she dressed very
theatrical. But here's the thing. Right, because, it's the whole thing. It's the showbiz part of it. Yeah. I was dressed in, like, you know, regular jeans, combat boots, so I was doubly like, what?
It's not like you showed up in an Aeroflot stewardess uniform.
Right, exactly.
All right, a lot of movies this week.
Too many.
Eight. And we're not even covering movies. Everything. Like, if you want to hear about Adam Egoyan's film, The Devil's Knot, or about one other one in there that we didn't do. Go check out the B Movies podcast, which you should totally listen to this week anyway, because I'm on there. And we played a lot of the 60 Seconds game, which is the thing they do where in 60 seconds you have to name as many films featuring a certain actor or director. And I discovered that it's much easier to play that game in the car than when you're in the studio with the Bibbs and Whitney staring at you in the watch.
You did pretty well, though, anyway.
I did okay.
I mean, you were cranking them out.
But I
missed Apocalypse Now.
Yes, for Brando. Yes.
Stupid.
But what
was the question?
It was like, name as many Marlon Brando films as you can in 60 seconds.
Okay.
And I forgot Apocalypse Now. I forgot Bedtime Story, which is a movie that was a flop. It was for some reason, it was one of those movies where if it was on, my family would just drop everything and watch it. It was him and David Niven. It was remade as Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Okay. I would never have gotten that.
Yeah, no, so, but I did.
That's
come up,
a point for you.
Yeah, I came up with Burn. I came up with some obscure ones, but I just forgot Apocalypse Now. And boy, John Leguizamo, that was a real like. Because he's
all animated features.
Yeah, that's true.
Every animated movie.
I forgot about Walking with Dinosaurs and all the Ice Age movies. Yeah. So anyway, like I said, it's easier to play after the fact or when you're not under pressure than when you're in there. But anyway, yeah, so we are covering a bunch of movies this week.
John Leguizamo is in Chef.
He is in Chef. Why don't you start with that? Because I didn't see it.
Oh, wait, you didn't?
Nope.
Have you seen Chef?
I have not seen Chef. However, the star, Jon Favreau, was in KCRW yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
He's on Morning Becomes Eclectic. He is pretty much on almost every KCRW show this week. So
he knows his.
I feel like I know this movie inside and out, even though I haven't seen it. Yes.
He plays a chef who used to be a maverick and now is sort of bucking against the constraints of pleasing the crowd and this. And a boss who is ridiculously bottom line in a way that it's played by Dustin Hoffman, who in a way that that makes me feel like the people who made this film don't know anything about restaurants. I mean, because
I've heard that from food people.
Didn't he have Roy Choi as his consultant?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and he's in the credits showing him how to make a grilled cheese, and oh boy.
Yeah, the Kogi barbecue.
You want to make this grilled cheese after you watch him make it, because you're like, that's exactly what I'm supposed to. I had never considered putting even more butter on it while it was grilling. Like, I just would spread the butter on it and then put it in the pan. But he keeps putting the butter on it.
That's the secret to all good restaurants.
Butterier
cooking,
and butterier.
You can
butterier.
Do that.
Butter.
Crisping it up real nice. Like, yeah. So,
butter's going to be a theme today. Just letting
it
you
sure
know.
It sure is.
Like,
are you talking about Marlon Brando?
No, okay. That too, but no.
So he quits because he can't stand the constraint.
He couldn't take the heat.
Correct. And so he got a bad review. He gets a bad review from Oliver Platt, who's like basically being Jonathan. Like he's
Jonathan Gold.
He's not. Yeah, but like a less entertaining, a worse writer and less entertaining than Jonathan Gold.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I read that his brother, Oliver Platt, is
Oliver
actually
Platt's brother is a
restaurant critic.
Is a restaurant
critic. From New York
yeah,
Magazine.
Yeah. That's why they wanted
Adam
him
Platt
to be it.
Interesting.
And so his ex-wife, Sofia Vergara, she's like, you need to open a food truck. And everyone's telling him, you need to open a food truck. And so he opens a food truck with John Leguizamo. Mm-hmm. And he takes his young son, who he doesn't have a very good relationship with. The kid's like 10. He takes them on this long road trip, and they learn how to have the food truck, and they go through Texas, and there's the big close-ups of barbecue and everything, and, you know, all these bands playing, everybody's real sweaty, and it's a very, very friendly movie, and it's a lot of fun to watch. It's very sweet. It's very good-hearted.
Well, it's basically Jon Favreau making a movie about Jon Favreau going from Swingers to Iron Man 2, right?
And then back
and,
rediscovering...
And Cowboys and Aliens, and then discovering this movie, basically.
His roots.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a very nice, sort of lived-in kind of movie. Unfortunately, the only things wrong with it are the things that are about restaurants. Because...
I hear like no women work at
there. There are no female chefs, no sous chefs, no line people, nothing. It's no women except Scarlett Johansson as a hostess.
Of course.
Because he got all his Iron Man buddies to be in this.
Yeah.
Robert Downey Jr.'s in it.
And you got to love when somebody writes and directs a movie for themselves where they used to be married to Sofia Vergara and they're currently sleeping with Scarlett Johansson.
I don't have a problem with this. And here's why.
Right.
It's the knocked up situation. I don't have a problem with this for two reasons. And it's a thing I always say, if the Jon Favreaus and the Seth Rogans of the world were so repulsive to women, then evolution would have gotten rid of them by now. That's one thing.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And so there are women in the world who are down for that kind of dude.
No, sure, yeah.
There just are.
Yes.
And so the other thing is that he's so, like... He's got so much like charisma and power that is very sexy.
No,
and that's a thing that translates.
I'm not saying that he couldn't pull that kind of lady. I'm just saying it's one thing when Judd Apatow casts Seth Rogen and Katherine Heigl as a couple.
Right.
It's another thing when Jon Favreau casts Jon Favreau.
It's also the Woody Allen.
I get that
thing as
that
well.
I understand.
He's always. Yeah. Opposite some gorgeous woman.
Right. Right. But in real life, he got gorgeous women, too. I mean, that's the thing.
Or any French movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Really.
Yeah. Exactly. So, no, I get what you're saying. It's just sort of like, whenever I hear that complaint, I think, well, that's, the real world is more complicated
believe me, I aspire to one day be as attractive as Seth Rogen or Jon Favreau. I'm just saying,
adorable.
When it's your own movie, it kind of smacks.
It's a little self-indulgent.
Yeah.
But so the only things that are really wrong are the restaurant things. You know,
the character doesn't speak Spanish.
He doesn't pick up any Spanish after having been married to Sofia Vergara
and working in restaurants
in Los Angeles for decades. And so those are the really big.
And also
things.
The taco truck.
The truck itself.
The origins of it is
the truck itself becomes an overnight success, which is also sort of all I need to do is tweet. Really? I suppose I'll begin tweeting
about my taco truck. They never watched the Great Food Truck Race on the Food Network, or they would know that it's very complicated.
Yeah. So it sort of glides over a lot of stuff. But it's very sweet. It's very charming, and it will make you very hungry. And what I really liked about it was the way that it is about how the internet changes your experience of stuff. The movie doesn't really comment on this at all, but it really is an example of how the internet works for or against you now. Whereas, you know, like if you don't have the kind of presence you need to have on the internet, you're not going to have as big a reach as you need to have. And so the film is super about Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.
But isn't that the real life
case
with Roy Choi and his Kogi barbecue?
Yeah,
it was all about where's the Kogi truck?
Where's the Kogi truck?
Find it
on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I wish, in a way, although again, the existence of the story does sort of provide evidence for this, I wish the movie had done a little more commenting on the idea that the food truck phenomenon is a response, just like Airbnb, just like all these unpaid internships, just like all this contract labor. The food truck phenomenon is a response to economic desperation. And how hard it is to get a restaurant going, to get anything going anywhere. And
it's the alternative to investing in brick and mortar and dealing with all that.
And so that's never commented on. But again, the fact that the story exists as it exists is sort of its own.
I guess I'm not feeling very excited to see it, despite the fact that I love food trucks and food, is that it seems like I can see the entire movie and what's going to happen before I sit down into it. And it's kind of, he's got this tortured relationship with his son, and then they bond over this adventure, and then at the end, I can just see it. See the whole thing. I mean, sort of Kramer versus Kramer without the without Meryl Streep.
Except he's friends.
He's much better at French toast.
He's friendly with Sofia Vergara. She's very much on board for it, and she like comes to work on the truck with him, even though she's apparently she's famous or something in the movie. Like they never really explain her character. Why is she so rich? Why she has a publicist that she can lend him? And I'm thinking, wait a second, are you supposed to be the actual Sofia Vergara? In this movie, like, are you on Modern Family and married to John Favreau with the food truck?
Is she always holding
and
like
now
a
you're
Diet
work
Pepsi
on the
with
food
the
truck?
Label
yeah,
out of
you
the
got
camera?
Diet
or...
Pepsi happening all the time. There are things that don't always work, but it's very sweet.
So you'd say recommend or video?
Yeah, watch it when it streams somewhere. Yeah.
Look for it on social media.
Look for it on social media. okay, so you guys both saw Palo Alto, and I did not.
Yes, which is the writing directing debut of one Gia Coppola, who is the granddaughter of Francis. Her father was Gio, who died tragically in a boating accident. Apparently, when she was
not even born.
Okay, so she never knew him. I can definitely see a Sofia Coppola influence in the film. There's some.
She grew up on those sets.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, like Virgin Suicides, it's based on a novel. It's about teen angst. It's shot in a certain kind of glowy way. And for me, it worked, actually. I was kind of surprised. I went in with very low expectations. It's based on a collection of stories written by James Franco. But, you know, as I was saying to Bibbs, it doesn't reinvent the wheel, but it's a nice wheel. If it's a movie about troubled teenagers who are sort of directionless and they aren't getting the guidance they need from their elders and making really, really bad mistakes and terrible decisions and, trying to kind of just feel their way out of it. But I thought it was really well acted. I liked, it's talk about children of, like the lead characters. You've got
Emma Roberts.
Daughter of Eric. You've got Jack Kilmer, who is the son of Val Kilmer and Joanne Whalley.
And Val Kilmer's in it.
And then Nat Wolff, who plays Fred, is the son of Polly Draper.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was in, remember, there was a Nickelodeon show called the Naked Brothers Band. He was part of that. And so yeah, for me it worked. I mean, I liked how kind of low key it was. I thought that Jack Kilmer was very natural. You know, there was not a lot of acting going on, but he was just this very kind of natural presence.
He's very likable.
Yeah, you were less into it. So tell me about that.
Yeah, I'll give you that it is likable.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. the characters and the acting are likable. Uh-huh. You like Emma Roberts. You like Jack Kilmer. You don't like James Franco, who plays the creepy soccer player who hits on Emma Roberts.
Right, the coach, yeah.
Coach, rather. She's a soccer lead soccer player, and he's really creepy.
He's smarmy, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of, ugh. And also, unbelievable in the sense that he is so good-looking, and you can't get beyond the fact that it's James Franco playing a creepy soccer coach.
I think there are, I would imagine that it's the good-looking ones who are the most successful predators of teenage girls. I mean, they're not going to, if he looked like, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman, I think he might have had a harder time pulling
that
off.
We had a girls volleyball coach in my high school who was a stud, and the girls all flocked around him. Well, he was a health teacher, of course, and a math teacher. And a volleyball coach. And he was just like this strapping...
Stone fox.
Burt Reynolds-y kind of like...
Did he have a big mustache?
Open shirt, big mustache kind of dude. I mean, I would walk down the hall and be like... looking at him and being like, I'm not gay. And... You know he cuddled up with some of those
improprieties occurred. Yeah.
Well, you know, and that's the other thing about it is everybody is good looking, and the film is shot beautifully. I'm sure the cinematographer, whoever it was raring to work on a Coppola production.
Sure.
And it looks great, but I kept thinking, I feel like I'm watching a commercial or a music video. Like, it was just too perfect, and it was too slick in a way, and not deep enough. And I felt like I've seen the party scene where the teenagers get wasted and trash the house 1,000 times, and it never kind of scratched the surface of the obvious tropes of the teenage angst movie.
I guess I will grant you that. I kind of think the slickness was to sort of make it, you know, is a way to draw eyes to it, is a way to like to have teenagers think they're seeing something that's familiar and comfortable and attractive, and then getting to then make the point about what the film is saying about how what messes these kids are, you know, rather than sort of jolt them out with something that they don't want to look at. I mean, like, look at a movie like Elephant. That's also gorgeously shot. Mm-hmm. It's more elliptical than this film is, but it's beautiful, and the people in it are beautiful, but there's real horror in it. And I kind of feel like in the same way in this film, there's real horror in it. I mean, there's a really great segment where, I haven't read the stories, but it sounds like they get into kind of a Bret Easton Ellis territory of one guy doing something really terrible to this girl that he's sleeping with, who, you know, she's clearly easily led into these sort of situations. And they very wisely, it all takes place off camera. Like, they narrate what happened. You see their eyes just sort of like out and standing in a backyard with each other. And the narration tells you about this thing that went down that's really terrible. And I think that a lot of male filmmakers would have really just
shown
right
it
in there, you know, under the rubric of like, oh, isn't this terrible? But, you know.
Well, I have to confess that I missed that part because I fast forwarded. I skipped ahead. But here's
Cheater.
The thing. I skipped ahead and I didn't feel like I missed anything.
Well, see, it was all in the narration. If you were just looking at the visuals, you missed. There's a whole like really awful thing that happens between Fred and
the blondie,
the blonde girl, yeah, who was really good. Zoe Levin, I think is her name.
I saw that they got together in her bedroom.
Right, but then like, when they're both standing in the yard, there's a narration thing of a really terrible thing that he puts her through, but we never see that. We just hear about it, and it's very effectively portrayed, I think. So,
it reminded me of another film that I saw. It Felt Like Love. Did you see that by Eliza Hittman?
No.
Oh, I've heard of it, but I didn't see it.
Very similar. It takes place on Long Island, and it's teenagers kind of groping their way through adolescence and early sexuality and what have you. It's a different class, though. It's kind of lower middle class, Italian-Americans. And it just felt a little more real in the sense, not because of the class difference between the two, but because you can feel real with richer kids,
sure,
of course.
No,
but just that there seemed to be a more of a rawness and an honesty to it.
Okay.
In this movie, I understand that there were some bad things that happened, but it seemed to be glossed over by the fact that they were all just so fabulous and fabulous looking.
I really admired that Emma Roberts, this is like the gawkiest character I think she's ever played. Like, I think in every other movie almost that I've seen her in, whether it's, you know, Scream 4 or Nancy Drew even, or that Homework movie, she always comes off very sort of mature and assured, even if the character we wind up finding out isn't, you know. And this one, she really allows herself to be kind of, you know, she felt like an actual adolescent.
She did. She's very appealing.
Yeah.
I was very drawn to her, and I liked watching her a lot. I guess I felt like I wanted something more, just...
Yeah.
Something more.
Okay.
That's all.
No, fair enough. I mean,
and now I can officially say I'm over my James Franco crush.
Done. You'll think of him as the soccer coach, and yeah, that'll put him on. No, I mean, there are any number of great movies that kind of tread in this area. I mean, I'm a big fan of Over the Edge. There was a movie that I didn't see from a couple of years
Edge.
Ago. River's Edge. The Myth of the American Sleepover. I didn't see, but I
saw
heard
that.
A lot of people compare this to.
It's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Palo Alto.
I'd have to go back and look at it again to remember what I even saw.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I grew up near Palo Alto, actually, in a very similar town.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it brought back some of that feeling. Uh-huh. And what can I say about it? It wasn't as nice.
This was the glossy travel brochure.
Wasn't as
version.
Glossy.
We didn't have all that stuff.
What else we got?
Legends of Oz.
Oh, yes.
: Dorothy's Return.
Yes. Explain, please.
Okay. You know those commercials for the General car insurance that they show on daytime TV?
Yep.
Okay. And it's the General, and it's just like this real choppy digital animation of this little army dude walking around going, "You need car insurance," you know. Well, those people made a movie about Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz. And they made it in 1997.
No.
And they made
they
it
just
this
made
year,
it.
Yeah. And the story goes like this. It is mere moments after Dorothy's first tornado-inspired visit to Oz.
Mm-hmm.
And she is still sleeping off the concussion. She wakes up, and there's an unscrupulous property appraiser trying to get everybody's homes taken away from them in Kansas. Because there's no such thing as FEMA or the Red Cross in this Kansas. There's just some evil-doing dude coming in going, "Your home is condemned, it's mine now." And everyone, Annie M. and Uncle Henry are like, "I guess we have to give him our house."
Is this supposed to be some comment on the financial collapse? That
nope.
Just
nope.
No. Okay.
Nope.
By the way, Uncle Henry and Auntie M are apparently voiced by Mike Judge and Billy West.
No, they're not.
Yeah. That's what Whitney said.
No, the names of the actors are in the IMDb. I mean, I'll look it up.
Whitney told me it was Mike Judge and Billy West.
I think he was kidding.
Oh.
I mean, I'll look it up right now. But anyway, so it's been, again, it's been moments. She's been home a day. She's been there. She's been back a day in Kansas. Already, the Wicked Witch of the West's brother. Did you know did you know she had a brother?
No.
An evil court jester, voiced by Martin Short, who does black magic. He has turned the Emerald City into Escape from New York, and it's just everything's a disaster. And anybody who tries to get in his way, he turns them into a marionette, and they go live in an oxygen chamber.
As you do.
Yeah.
So the Tin Man and the Lion and the Scarecrow, Kelsey Grammer, Jim Belushi, and Dan Aykroyd, they invent a rainbow vacuum tube with a hand at the end of it that comes and snaps Dorothy back into Oz. And here's what she says when she gets back into Oz with Toto. "Toto, we're back in Oz. I can't believe it. We're back in Oz." And I'm like, "You were just there yesterday! It's been one day! Here, you can't believe it!"
You haven't gotten your photos back.
Yeah,
from
it's not even
Rite Aid yet.
You're still wet from throwing the water on the witch. And everything's a disaster again. Like, she fixes everything.
A disaster.
In The Wizard of Oz. And everything now is a disaster again because of the evil court jester. This is, again, it's been hours. And he works very fast.
But this sounds like a Sid and Marty Krofft Saturday morning delusion.
Yeah, I wish. Only. It's full of dazzle camouflage. It's full of, like... you know, these creepy, weird characters, like a plaid giant owl that's bigger than a human being. And
but this could be cool.
A lollipop. Oh, it could be.
In a surreal way. In
L. Frank Baum.
There's a lollipop judge that sentences her to death for eating too much candy in the Candy County, and she's defended by a stick of gum that's also a lawyer. They meet Patrick Stewart. He's a tree. They make a boat out of him. They end up having, there's a big war at the end. Of course, there's a big war at the end. There's always got to be a war at the end of all these kids' movies now.
There's songs. Is a kids' movie?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a children's animated feature. Yeah.
This isn't a
children and
a 420 movie.
No. I guess it could be a 420 movie if you 420'd it hard enough. but these rotten songs that Lea Michele, who plays, she's the voice of Dorothy, she sings these songs, and the songs are all about, I'm trying, and the world's upside down, and, you know, what am I going to do, and I'm going to build a tree out of Patrick Stewart, build a boat out of Patrick Stewart.
As the giving
let's tribute. Let's eat all this candy, and Toto eats chocolate.
Dogs can't eat
That's
chocolate.
Right. So, but all he does is burp. Ha ha! Burping little Toto.
That's...
And
Those
the message
be
is,
funny.
Kids,
feed your dog
feed your dog some chocolate because they're going to really like it. They're going to love that chocolate.
So this is like a
it's
movie
evil.
Written by a cat.
Terrible, terrible, terrible movie. At one point, there's during the big war, something they plan doesn't go right, and the Scarecrow's yelling, plan's not working, abort, abort, abort. I'm like, well, somebody should have thought of that earlier. It is not the kind of film that anyone needs to see ever in the whole world. Don't make the mistake, listeners, of thinking we're talking about Oogie Loves here, because it's not. Oogie Loves is a psychedelic trip for your mind. And
this is a good time, I think, for you to explain the zero star, half star.
That is correct.
Difference.
If you go to my reviews on movies.com and I hate something, I always give it half a star. Because my zero-star reviews are reserved for Why Did I Get Married 2? Temptation, Confessions of a Marriage Counselor, Oogie Loves. Things like that.
Movies
things
that are
so abominably crazy and inept and beyond what human reality could conceive.
You have to run out and see it.
You have to run out and see it right now. That's a zero-star
so
review.
So bad it's good?
So bad
it's
you
fascinating.
Won't believe you won't believe you're watching it.
You're watching a train wreck.
This is just...
So bad you want the
so bad
2 hours
just,
back.
So bad it's bad.
So badly.
Yeah, half a star is just so bad it's bad, and zero is, as Dave has put it, so awful it's awesome.
Yeah. You want to never... Like, I sat through it thinking, do I leave? I could get up and leave. I don't know anybody in this screening. No one would ever know that I left. There were like 12 other people in the screening. I had no idea who they were. No, and I know I know an F ton of film critics.
We see
in
the
this
same
city.
Faces, and then it's always weird when you're at one of those screenings. Yeah. You're like,
who are
you
folks?
People?
And it was in a little screen. It was in one of the little private screenings. It wasn't like it was in a big. It wasn't like a landmark. It wasn't at the landmark in KCRW or the Coast or the hip hop station. No one was hosting the screening. It was a little private screening room, and I didn't know anybody in there. And I thought I could leave. And I thought, or I could commit suicide.
But don't they usually not screen if they have a dog?
You'd be surprised. I mean, yes, if they aren't screening it, that is almost entirely a guarantee that it's going to stink. But just because it stinks doesn't mean they won't show it to you. I don't know who decides these things. But believe me.
Do they think, maybe one or two people, the Peter Traverses of the world, will like it?
or they think that that not showing it makes too strong a statement. That if they just show it once... You know, at an inconvenient time, then no one can accuse them of having a movie that they're totally embarrassed by. You know what I'm saying? So it's a whole thing.
Okay, so that's that.
So don't go see that, even for fun.
No.
Even if you're a 420-er.
No.
Okay. Even if you're a parent desperate for entertainment.
Bibbs and Whitney of the B-Movies podcast both liked this movie, and I think they were actually high
while they watched it.
They would, you know, they can deny it all day. But they were either both completely... like the tripping balls or they are nuts.
You can take that up with
I challenge them. Yeah. Neighbors, we saw Neighbors.
Yes.
Okay, Neighbors, I'm slightly intrigued by.
It's fun.
It's really good. It's really funny.
The thing about it, well...
Do we have to explain the plot at all?
I think people know the story.
How many years have they been advertising this movie now?
Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne, they have a baby, and the frat moves in next door, and at first they're friends, and then they're not, then war breaks out. It's good. The thing is, and I've found myself kind of defending it to folks, like to Christy and Robert Abley on What the Flick this week, and other people.
Did they not like it?
They liked it okay, but their problem was that it's a movie that has such promise as far as this great setup, and that you could use that, the setup of the film, as a way to build a really interesting, precise kind of comedy, where it's sort of it unfolds like clockwork, and there's escalation, and there's setups and payoffs and all that kind of thing. And this movie is very kind of shaggy, and it, you can tell they're doing a lot of improv-ing, and they're just sort of going along, and it does hit certain plot points, and it does build to a certain extent.
It's not in the loop.
Yeah, exactly. it is not the sort of masterwork of Swiss timing that you would expect from this kind of comedy in a certain director's hands. This is directed by Nicholas Stoller, who is kind of out of the Apatow school. He directed Forgetting Sarah Marshall and Get Him to the Greek and 5 Year Engagement. He wrote the two Muppet movies, the recent ones. And it's very content to sort of give you the premise and then just kind of wander around and get comfy in it. But in doing that, it's funny. I mean, we see a lot of movies, like The Watch comes to mind, where they cast a bunch of funny people in it, and you can tell they just sort of like, okay, go.
There are some funny moments in The Watch.
Yeah, but very few and far between.
A lot of them, yeah.
This one is, I laughed at pretty much every scene in the movie. I thought it was all funny. So even though it wasn't necessarily going anywhere complicated, you laugh along the way and you enjoy going that way with them.
Yeah, I don't think you go to this movie hoping for some intricate plot. You can, again, see exactly where it's going.
Yeah.
You're going to see the comedic performances from Seth Rogen.
Yeah. Right? And Rose Byrne actually gets to, does not sort of get shunted off as kind of like the logical lady who's no fun, There's a great scene where she and Seth Rogen talk about the fact that, where he's saying, like, look, I'm the Kevin James, and you're the wife. She's like, no, but I can be Kevin James, too. Why can't I be Kevin James?
And then she proceeds to be Kevin James.
Yeah, she
which
actually...
Which is really great.
She ups the game.
She has...
And she's a new mother, and so it's... Exactly. Is it a little shocking that she's...
That she parties is a little weird. I think people will have problems. Like, just because you're holding your baby monitor doesn't excuse that you're getting, like, super ripped at the frat house next door at an all-night party. Funny thing about the Kevin James thing is that, Kevin James and Seth Rogen a couple of years ago both had mall cop movies in theaters at the same time. And Kevin James's was Paul Blart, which was a big hit, and Rogen's was Observe and Report, which wasn't.
It's an inside joke.
I think it is. I think it's a little meta. But I think Observe and Report's a much better movie. But anyway, so Rose Byrne gets to do fun stuff. Zac Efron is a lot funnier than he's gotten to be in a lot of other films.
I like him going in this direction because... After the High School Musical stuff, you could feel him sort of trying to figure out what he was going to do, how to be an adult star, how to be an adult actor.
Take me seriously.
How to be taken seriously. So he went off and he did all these dramas, but it was really hard to, take him seriously in the dramas because he was still so young. And so... Pretty,
he makes his movie at any price, where he's been raised on a farm and now he's a stock car racer and hard drinking and hard loving. Like, yeah, Zac Efron, I'm not buying this from you.
No, and the Paperboy was supposed to be this edgy, daring thing that he was going to do, and it was, but it was very sort of like sleazily sexual and stuff. Yeah. But that turned into a kind of a comedy because it was so crazy. Such a crazy movie.
It teetered into camp, basically. Yeah.
So this is a great space for him to be in because, I think, when you look at him, you are inspired to do two things. You want to kiss him or you want to punch him.
Mm-hmm. Which is the case with most frat boys.
And this is the kind of movie that, that gives you both of those things. Because he's always shirtless. And he's always like winking like this at the whoever. And so if you are apt to swoon for him, you will. But
he's even more ripped than he was in that awkward moment. Yeah.
His body is insane.
As Seth Rogen says, your entire body is an arrow that points to your penis.
But he's kind of a sociopath in this movie. Like he is a bad dude. But then on another level, you realize that he's not exactly a bad dude. It's a character that he's playing.
And he is dreading the impending approach of adulthood. And meanwhile, you've got Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne who are sort of dreading the fact that, oh God, we're those people now who have a kid and have a mortgage and are calling the cops because of a loud party. Yeah. You know, so everybody's afraid of growing up in this movie in one way or another.
What so I it's like going to the Ace Hotel.
Right? Thank you.
When you're like, I used to be you, and they're looking at you. Yeah. I'm the creepy old guy
at the concert.
What I like about the Seth Rogen movies over time is that I believe he is modeling an adaptable version of adulthood. Like, if you are a young person, you can see him each film encountering some obstacle that's getting in the way of him doing nothing. and he has to do something.
So this is maybe the sequel to Knocked Up?
Kind of.
In its way.
Because he's had to deal with, as a character, he's had to deal with unplanned pregnancy and a friend who has possibly terminal cancer. And
the end of the world.
The end of the world as metaphor for friendships growing older and estranged. And, you know, a movie that tanked that no one saw where he was with a smothering mother that he had to sort of befriend and also sort of detach from at the same time.
Becoming a pornographer.
Yeah, well, yes, also that. But this is a really sort of interesting trajectory for him. And because of his look and his body and his everything, he is everyone's sort of favorite schlub now. And he's not a complete idiot because the comedy is too smart. And so it really is this interesting kind of new version of this dumb man-child character who always has to inch a little closer to growing up by the end of the film. I like what he does.
So a little bit like the Jon Favreau character in Chef.
Yeah, but doesn't get everything he wants. Unlike the Jon Favreau character.
Doesn't have Scarlett Johansson.
Who gets everything he wants.
Rose Byrne is not. Nothing to see that.
True. Okay, so we also saw Mom's Night Out.
Oh, yeah.
Just the very title makes me want to run screaming.
Oh, it's also a Christian movie.
It's a Christian comedy.
Okay, we'll not really be seeing that.
It's a Christian comedy. It's about Sarah Drew from Private Practice. She's a mommy blogger who's got writer's block. And her husband,
Sean Astin.
Sean Astin, he's the sole breadwinner of the family.
But he's never
always home. He's always flying for work. And three kids who are, you know, mommy, mommy, mommy. And the house is always a disaster. But she's a OCD clean freak. And so she's constantly exhausted, trying to keep up with the kids and trying to clean up after them and stuff. She needs a night out. And here's, I've gotten a few days away from this film now that we saw on Thursday night. Mm. And the pivotal scene where she decides she needs her mom's night out is when she picks up a shoe, a fancy, sparkly
strappy,
shoe.
Spangly shoe.
In the closet and says, I haven't worn this in 2 years. And I thought, wait a second. 2 years?
You have three children.
Your husband hasn't taken you to dinner in 2 years? Like, you don't need a night out. You need a better husband.
That's the thing about this. That's part of the problem with this movie. That it never for a second suggests that these moms would be less frazzled if their husbands would actually pick up after themselves mind the children
and do
like
their part
person.
In the house. Yes.
Right. So it's
sounds really
it's very trite and it's very silly
retro.
It's trying to be Sex in the City, Hangover-y kind of wacky misadventures, but it's three Christian gals in the town, so no one's drinking. And
there's even a scene where Patricia Heaton sees empty beer bottles that are
near her,
physically too close to them, and she wants them moved away.
Which is actually
kind of a funny bit. Yeah. It's a funny bit because she gathers them all up and she's trying to.
And then she winds up on camera. Yeah. It's a whole thing.
What is the message?
She plays
of this?
The pastor's wife. Stay home.
The unspoken message is, ladies, if you would just stay home, things would be much calmer.
Look at what happens when you go out.
Because bad things happen when moms go out. Yeah. They see beer bottles.
The stated message is that God loves you and knows that you're trying and your kids appreciate the effort that you're putting through. Even if things aren't perfect, no one is.
But she's unhappy at home.
Kind of, yeah.
They show her unhappy and frazzled.
Yeah. But at the end,
but then at the end of the movie, the house has been magically cleaned
by the
kids,
husband,
and the kids are mysteriously gone. With
he
the
does
husband.
Do his part at the end. He
so
cleans
yeah,
the house for
he cleans yeah. gets the house
well,
clean.
So maybe that's
the
message.
I think so. Yeah, and like, and the sun streams in through the clean window, and she sits down and starts vlogging away.
Finally, she can write.
For that $25 she's going to get for
so
that
as
post.
Dumb as it is.
Oh, no, it's her own blog. She's not getting anything. But it's very kind of that Carrie Bradshaw where you hear her thoughts and the words are on the screen. It's like, oh, but there, I will say, you know, it is, I laughed more at this than I did at Walk of Shame or at Tyler Perry's The Single Moms Club. So, baby steps.
It is.
But all of those are
awful.
Cliche visions of what a woman's role is in a very
and
backwards
all,
way.
All, coincidentally, directed by men. No figure.
Having said all this, as dumb as it is, it is the best Christian movie to come out this
Since
year.
The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
And there's a bunch of them. There's a whole bunch of Christian movies that have been out already this year, and more are coming. And this one has production values, as opposed to things like God's Not Dead, which is
reprehensible.
An inept. It's just a bad-looking, badly made. It has production values. It has real actors. It has Sarah Drew just giving it everything she's got. Like, you feel for her during the movie?
Yeah, no, she...
How do we know this is a Christian movie?
Oh, because they talk about Jesus and the Bible and church and stuff through the entire film.
Yeah. Patricia Heaton's playing the pastor's wife at First Baptist. And the big homily at the end is basically delivered by Trace Adkins playing a biker, telling her about how God don't make mistakes and how, you know, you're just out there, your kids appreciate you, blah, blah, blah.
So I know that this audience for this film needs this film. They need this movie because the aspirational part of it for them is that they don't have to work outside the home. You know, that they can go home and be mommies the way that the evangelical the conservative evangelical subculture, you know, presents this as an ideal. And so for the audience that wants to see this movie, that is an idealized state. And
they don't get a lot of comedies aimed at them.
And they don't get a lot of comedies aimed at them. And so the fact that this one is well executed and not hateful and not pushy and not super gross. I mean, it's not feminist either, but nothing in that world is. And so it is a serviceable film for that audience that they will like, and that I will also say, like you, I laughed a good half a dozen times. There's some genuinely funny bits in there. As soon as they go down the Irma Bombeck path of darkness and satire, that's when it's funny. Like when the cops come and take everyone to jail, and the one loan-hating man in the movie,
the one lone kid-hating man in the movie
who's a babysitter, says, "All right, kids, we're all going to jail." And so, like, that happens. You just, that becomes the Irma Bombecky kind of part of it.
Patricia Heaton fires off some good one-liners. Yeah. There's a dopey, but there's a funny running gag where all of her texts are complete gobbledygook because she's such a bad typist, and things get auto-corrected into something just bizarre.
She gets tased at one point.
And does she blame Satan for that?
No, one ever brings up Satan. She gets tased at one point, and then after she gets tased, she can't speak, really. And she's trying to tell Sarah Drew, "God loves you." And she's like, "God loves you." And so that's actually really funny. It's what it's supposed to be. It is a film that is supposed to be exactly what it is. And
sadly, however, it is dying at the box office.
Yeah, because what the Christians really want is something garbagey like God's Not Dead,
this,
which kills, you know, the bad people at the end of the movie.
It's making less money this weekend than I think Heaven Is For Real in its third or fourth weekend.
Yeah.
So, yeah. The,
but it doesn't hit the magical four quadrants at all.
No.
And it's sort of like barely a snippet of one quadrant. Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean...
Because the mom quadrant, the adult woman quadrant... You know what else they didn't want to go see? They wanted
to see the other woman.
Yeah, but you know why? You know why that was what they wanted to see? Because
their boyfriends wanted to see Kate Upton.
Because their boyfriends wanted to see Kate Upton, and because that is not a film about a woman who lives at home in a normal house. That was about rich,
glossy
ass
New
ladies
York and Connecticut
having amazing homes
and going
stuff
to
like that.
Going to the Bahamas.
And so it is the Sex and the City fantasy. Mm. The other woman. This is not anyone's fantasy.
No,
this
sounds
this
like
is someone's
get back
reality.
Inside your house, Cinderella, and enjoy the rest of your life.
Yeah, sure, have a night out, then go home.
Mm-hmm. And there's no prince to whisk you away to the magic castle.
No. Okay, so we're running low on time. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to skip Belle.
Okay.
We'll talk about it next week.
Okay.
Also, Ida. We'll talk about that next week.
Okay.
And let's talk about God's Pocket next week, too. Because these are three little indie things. They're going to roll out slowly.
Before we press on, though, Dave, who is the presenting, who sponsors this program?
I'm so glad you asked, Alonzo. Wait, I gotta scroll up.
I know you know.
Ah, Linoleum Knife is brought to you by The Real Truth. Everything you didn't know you needed to know about making an independent film by Reed Martin.
Ta-da!
Available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold, and also unfine books. This is a unique independent filmmaking guide that details the unforeseen legal challenges.
What?
That first-time directors, producers, and screenwriters inevitably face. Are you dumb? Do you not know about laws? You need this book. And because you were probably an artist and a filmmaker, that means you are dumb about laws.
Yes.
You think you can do whatever you want. You think you can be... Remember how when Bruce LaBruce came to the film festival in Dallas, mm-hmm. and they were like, oh, how did you deal with permits for Hustler White? He's like, we didn't have any permits. We just went to Plumber Park and filmed the Hustlers. Like, they didn't even know we were there. And that's... He got away with that because he's a punk rock art film maker. You are not going to get away with
you
this.
You are not Bruce LaBruce.
You are not Bruce LaBruce. You are not the
Is that
Cushars.
His real name?
That's his Madam Bomb.
Gotcha. That is my real name, by the way.
The movie Ed Wood made shooting without permits look funny and cool, but you know it's not cool. Say no to shooting without permits.
That's right.
It's not as... your friends are going to tell you it's cool to shoot without a permit.
Yeah, if your friends shot with a permit off of a cliff, would you do that, huh?
Probably. Try that stuff in the real world, and you could end up with huge fines and having your film shut down, not to mention being arrested for your second or third violation. Indie filmmakers need legal advice, and The Real Truth explains why and where dozens of pitfalls could trip you up. There's more stuff about contracts. You better sign one and read it. When you buy a phone, you don't do that.
Yeah. None of this scrolling to the bottom and clicking, I agree.
Sign a lease, when you sign a lease, you don't do that. You don't read anything when you sign the lease. But you better sign a lease when you get your film. You better even not a lease.
Contract.
A lease? You better sign a contract when you get your production contracts and for service projects contracts for the indie film. Because if you don't read that contract, you're going to get...
Pwned.
Yes. Thank you for that word. You say, hey, man, I'm an artist. I don't worry about that kind of stuff. Well, you better, because you stop being an idiot.
You know who does worry about that stuff? Law people.
That's right.
Who will take all your things.
Even worse, without an employment contract, nearly anyone who worked on the movie can say they were a producer.
What?
And demand a huge payment.
Ugh.
So that caterer or the sound guy you still owe money to can claim they were working for a stake in the film and sue for part of the profits for a huge screen credit, and then they will win. And then you will never make another film again because you're stupid and don't deserve to.
You didn't hire a lawyer or read The Real Truth.
The Real Truth has an extensive chapter on how to avoid wrecking your movie by ignoring important legal issues early on. Here's another fun example. Aspiring indie filmmakers will often puff themselves up and offer big money pay or play deals to famous actors to get them to read a script or to promise to star in their projects. And then what the indie filmmaker doesn't realize or take seriously, again, why? Stupid, is that they can't raise the entire budget to actually make their first or second film, and they're still on the hook for the money they promised that actor to appear in the movie. So when Kevin Sorbo comes to you and says,
where's my money?
Where's my $500,000? I want my $2. You got to pay him.
That's right.
Wait, pay or play? What does that mean? Well, again, you're stupid. So, that's just one of 100 legal issues you will learn how to avoid by reading The Real Truth, R-E-E-L, by Reed Martin from Favor and Favor.
We'll have a link at the Facebook page.
Get that book. Stop being a dummy. All right, here's a letter.
Are you talking about Fed Up?
We'll talk about that next week.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, because that's
also a small doc.
That's a small doc.
Okay, yeah.
We'll just push all this stuff next week.
Okay, fine. With a bunch of stuff next week.
We don't want to keep our guest here all dang day.
Madam Bomb has places to be.
I could be here all day if I didn't have to go clean my house and put on my strappy shoes.
Check out this.
Mom's not out.
Check out this letter. This is another God's Not Dead letter.
Yeah, oh, that they just keep them coming, people.
But get this is a good one.
Okay.
I thought the review was excellent. Thank you. You're right. It was. Admittedly, I have not seen the movie yet, but strangely, this is why I liked your review. It wasn't written with a presupposed bias for or against, but was written with respect to both believers and unbelievers. You managed to do this without conveying where you stand in your own beliefs. That's my trick.
Nor will you ever.
Nor will you ever. Personally, I am an evangelical Christian.
Okay.
And would sooner see a film based on Shane Claiborne's philosophy. He's this hippie peace and justice guy who wrote The Irresistible Revolution. That challenges the American church. Now, while there are times I want to throttle Claiborne for his hippie approach, oh, he's a total hippie. White dude with dreads. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no. It's like that. Wears these weird
schmatas,
dung colored smocks and stuff. I'm like, come on, dude. Can you just. Everybody calm down. It's... Just go work in the soup kitchen and, you know.
He makes whole grain communion.
Yeah. I did so because I felt challenged in a far more pragmatic way. I think audiences would be far more moved by this kind of radical approach to Christianity than the dead chick track approach to the films like this one that you reviewed. And this is a film that is actually based on an urban legend that became a chick track. You know what the chick tracks are?
I don't.
Those little comic books that they leave
those
like
insane,
at bus stops.
Oh, right-wing comics.
Those crazy
right.
Christian
yeah.
ones.
Yeah.
You're going to hell
yeah.
now.
Right.
Yeah.
Repent.
Yes.
Here's what he says more. And I'm a proud Canadian and a person who happens to work as an evangelical in an environment of many religions. I am a prison chaplain.
Whoa. Mm.
A place where only love, to quote Bono, please, dude, do not quote Bono, will have any effect. I used to like you until you quoted Bono.
That's where we draw the line.
Sincerely, the Reverend Paul R. Kern, B. The M. Div. D. Min, Canada.
All right.
I don't know what any of those abbreviations mean.
Bachelor of Theology, Master of Divinity, and
Doctorate
of Ministry?
I don't know. Doctor of something.
It's a lot of initials.
Yes, it's impressive.
And you have listeners in Canada.
Prisoner chaplain.
We do. Oh, so, we have listeners. We had a New Zealand letter last week.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Yeah. We're very popular on
and,
the internet.
And according to the... if you haven't taken our listener survey yet, and you live in a far-off place, please do, because we've been enjoying seeing where everybody is from.
And how do you do that?
Well, we have a link we have a link on our Facebook page
no
to SurveyMonkey.
I want to take your listener survey.
Oh, good. You should.
Okay.
Send her the link to it.
I will do that.
Yeah. Okay, so what else do we have to say? We have to say you should buy...
Oh, Two for the Road
the
is
new,
available.
The Linoleum Knife presents more Linoleum Knife, our extra episodes that are for sale, where we talk about one movie for the entire running time of that movie. Treat it like a commentary. Treat it like something you get on the treadmill to or whatever. The new one is the 1967 Albert Finney, Audrey Hepburn film from Stanley Donen called Two for the Road. It's... We are at our peak of critical powers.
Is this like Mystery Science Theater?
No.
Okay.
Quite the opposite.
Okay.
No.
It's an actual, we take it seriously. We provide historical insight and critical analysis and talk about the movie for real. Because it's, even when we do a movie that's ridiculous like The Apple, like we're actually talking about how it got made and why and stuff like that. So,
one of our friends is part of Mystery Science Theater, so we would never tread on that territory.
Yeah, no, she owns that stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you can...
That's $1.99.
Yeah, PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know which of our extra episodes you want and what email you want us to send it to.
Pre-order a Linoleum Knife t-shirt. Those are $20.
Also at PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com and include your shipping address and size of the shirt.
And that's it.
Awesome.
We're done.
Madeline Brand.
Yes.
You were so awesome.
Well, thanks
yes,
for having
Madeline
me.
Brand.
This was such fun.
You were
and
great.
I don't have the coma yet.
Well, hopefully it won't hit you on the drive home.
Maybe it will happen
pancakes.
While you're driving.
You had a little coffee. That might balance it out.
Yeah.
As always, we thank Blue for our theme music. You can check out everything about his amazing career at bluetopia.com, BLEUTOPIA. Check out our friends out there on the internet. Go to ChrissyLemire.com. She's also writing at RogerEbert.com. If you are a serious XM listener, check out the Rotten Tomatoes Radio on Tuesdays and Thursdays with Matt Atchison and Gray Drake. They also now have the Rotten Tomatoes podcast you can subscribe to on iTunes. Also, also at SiriusXM, of course, is the Frank DeCaro Show and Derek and Romaine. We were just on this week, which was fun. And in the podcast universe, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley. Again, I was on the B-Movies podcast this week, so do check that out. I mix it up with Bibbs and Whitney. And yet another movie podcast, because heaven knows the world needed another one. Check out Call and Response.
Have you listened to it yet?
I have, yeah.
Okay, so you're actually recommending the thing that you like and that you know about.
My friends Lane Needler and Doug Jones talk about movies every week. You might skip the one about the other woman because neither of them actually saw it, but they talk about it anyway. But that's a fun show, and they're smart guys. Also, check out Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, the Schmoes Know podcast, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash, The Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, and The Lunch. You can subscribe to this show for free at iTunes, and if you want to leave us a positive review, that would be great. You can stream us at Stitcher Radio and give us a thumbs up there as well. You can stream us at thelounge.com, or you can stream us at our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. You can check into the show at TVTag.com and drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
That sounds too much stuff.
With your questions, your comments.
My head is spinning.
With your top 10 lists or bottom 10 lists. We've gotten some nice tips from our purchasers of the extra episodes, which you didn't have to do, but it was very generous of you, and we appreciate it.
It's weird.
I'm not going to say no.
Well, I'm not going to say no, but quit it.
No, don't.
Pay for the thing.
Look, do what you
We're
like.
We're super grateful. But stop throwing your money at us.
We would never in a million years ask you to do it, but it's lovely that you did. Anyway, so this was fabulous.
You know I love money.
Yeah. Madeline, where can people find you online?
Oh, well, you can podcast at iTunes, press play, KCRW press play. I'm on Twitter at The Mad Brand.
And the show is at press play?
KCRW press play.
And it's KCRW.com?
KCRW.com. Check it out. We're there. We have a blog. We have a show page.
Her show is amazing, even when Dave and I aren't on it. So you should
it's more amazing when you are.
Oh, that's sweet. All right.
I don't want to sound ungrateful for the people who gave us more than they were supposed to give.
Yes, don't.
That's not the point. I wasn't trying to be ungrateful.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I just... you... just stop it.
Behave, Dave. We thank you for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Okay. Goodbye.